So we'll go now and welcome back all my friends to the super special Spring Rebirth webinar, which also happens to be on Grandma's birthday. Today's webinar is the third of three, where Grandma's helping connect the world of holistic veterinary medicine and the wisdom of indigenous culture. Spring is the time of regeneration in nature, a time when the earth awakens from its winter slumber and bursts forth with new life. Indigenous cultures around the world have long recognized the importance of this time of the year, and they've developed deep connections with the natural world, and they've passed that down orally, like today on the webinar, from generation to generation. My name is Jeff Feynman. I'm a holistic veterinarian, and I'm honored to be here today with world-renowned holistic vet Alan Schoen and Native American elder Grandma Nancy. So thank you all so much for sharing time with us today. While Grandma helps bridge the gap between modern evidence-based and scientific medicine with the EVM, also experience-based medicine of indigenous wisdom and ways to heal animals that work with nature. And Grandma's hope is to touch one of your hearts today and inspire you to connect with the natural world, increase and use our love to understand the natural world and be in the world, and just guide us on an exciting journey to live in harmony with the earth. So Grandma, do you take it away, or Alan, do you have any words you want to share?
Well, I would just, send you endless, boundless birthday wishes, and thank you for sharing animal wisdom with us on your birthday, because as the saying, in giving is receiving. So thank you. And this is your receiving of birthday wishes from boundless animals and human animals from around the world. So we thank you, and I'm so grateful to you for sharing your animal wisdom, and blessings to you from all beings.
Miigwech in the Anishinaabe language, Chi Miigwech, very much thank you, Jeff and Alan. And it's a pleasure to be back here with whoever. Some may be returning from the other webinars, and some might be new. And what we've been talking about is the Native American perspective that we humans are simply a part of everything, that the little ant has as much right to a life on this planet as we do, and that we all really work in conjunction with each other. And in the indigenous cultures globally, I would almost dare say globally, particularly in the Algonquin culture, animals are our teachers. And that's a very different concept from most modern day thinking, where, we own our pets or what have you. And, it's not about ownership, it's about companionship and caring for each other. Because yes, we might physically care for our animals, but look at what they give us in return. So I'm going to take some approaches today. I thought it'd be interesting to tell you what the two moons are in both the Anishinaabe and Lakota culture, because it has a bearing on things we're going to talk about today. So in the Lakota tradition, this month's moon, April's moon, is called the moon of the fattening. And what it really refers to is, this is the time when we start to see the baby animals born. So we see, you know, the mares, the wild horse mares, and we see the elk cows starting to drop. The bear has come out of her cave with her cubs that were born in the cave. So, and then in the Anishinaabe moon, it's the moon of the broken snowshoes, because this is the time of year when the snow up north gets wonky, and you know, you can go out there and think it's, you know, a good steady coat, but next thing your snowshoe falls way down and sometimes doesn't make it back up without breaking. So therefore the moon of the broken snowshoes. And you know, this is when the hard winter for the animals, especially, you know, our animals who still have wilderness to live in, they may have had a harsh time during the winter, and yet they know how to survive better than we would at this point. But, you know, once upon a time, all of us, no matter where your ethnicity comes from, once we were all part of a great tribal being. And once we all sat around a campfire and probably played on a hollow log, a drum beat on a hollow log. And so let's take a look at what these animals are teaching us that we can actually still put into a useful perspective today. As I mentioned, the bears had prepared themselves. They gorged themselves with salmon or berries, whatever they could find to eat, in preparation for that semi-sleep in the cave, where even the young were born in that cave. And so that bear is still teaching us today. Plan ahead. Try and think of what if we had an emergency, and unfortunately we're seeing floods. Mother Earth is hurting. I just participated in a beautiful Earth Day celebration, even though Earth Day isn't until next week, but for various and sundry reasons, we celebrated today. So, you know, we're seeing throughout the globe floods and fires and natural disasters, many of which unfortunately are triggered by us humans. So how come these animals, despite horrific odds, are still making it? And unfortunately, some species have not. And if we're not more careful, we will lose more species. And once they're gone, you can't bring them back. But are we racing so fast down the turnpike that we're even endangering our own race, the human race? And so we have to learn to live simpler, with not as much demands on our time, because time is our most valuable commodity. We only get so much time. So taking the time to look at what the animals are teaching us, that bear is still teaching us to be prepared for a leaner time, to know how you would manage in a leaner time. You know, if you couldn't go to the supermarket, how would you provide yourself with food? The animals, see how they have this figured out. That's why that bear stocked up before he went in the winter cave. And then of course, when he comes out, he's terribly, terribly hungry. And you know, we're all hungry in our own way. we're either hungry chasing the dollar, or, as I said, time is our most valuable commodity. And what about the fox? You know, we're seeing foxes in suburban neighborhoods because so much of their habitat has been gone. But what is the fox teaching us? That fox could be out in your backyard and you might never even be aware that that fox is there, because he has gotten so good at knowing how to blend in and camouflage himself in a way. I'm not going to let you know I'm here unless I really want to let you know I'm here. And how many of us say, I'm just going to blend in until I see what the situation is. Then when I know what the situation is, then I may show myself, then I may speak. But sometimes it's really good to know how just to be there and blend in and not, you know, the dominant society to just, you have to have a voice, you have to respond instantly. No, we don't. If you watch that fox, he'll kind of look around like, if I had to get out of this situation, where's the best place where I'd have more than one option? You know, it's like we talked about the beaver and what an incredible engineer the beaver is, and how when a beaver builds his dam, when he builds the beaver dams, there's always three escape routes. So are we building, you know, safety into our lives, our workplace? And I'm not just talking about physical safety. I'm talking about emotional safety and spiritual safety. So sometimes blending like that fox isn't bad. Sometimes thinking things through like that beaver does when he's building. These are lessons we're still learning from our animal brothers and sisters. You know, what about the migrating birds? Now, so many of the birds have migrated. We've seen the great big formations of geese returning from the warmer climates now to the north. And I think I taught the lesson of the goose, where when you see that lead goose in that V-shaped column, and it's not always the same goose that's the leader, because they can get tired and they'll go back and another goose will come up and take its place, and they'll go back and kind of rely on the thermals that the other geese are creating. So have we become too individualistic and no longer realize that it takes a community to keep us from getting burnt out and tired? So these are all things, you know, because our society is like, you have to be number one. I don't care if you're number one at anything, there's always going to be somebody who is more adept than you are, or who's cleverer than you are. And, you know, why do we have to be number one? Why can't we be successful but not have to walk over other people or other beings to achieve that goal? The strongest leaders are leaders who know how to delegate and work with community. And if you have a community that works really well together, there's a unity there. So these geese that fly in that formation, they know about that. The wolves know about that. And yes, you have the strong alpha wolves who really are the most protective than the strongest ones. And that doesn't say if you have good leadership abilities not to use those abilities. Absolutely use those abilities. but don't look down on people who might not have the leadership skills that you do, because without them, things might not get accomplished either. So everyone has a place in the circle. And that's one of the things that the animals don't take more than they need. They'll take what they need, but they won't waste anything. They don't take more than they need to do. And you know, if there's something that's killed for food and there's leavings, then you know, then your vultures and what have you will come in, their nature's garbage bin. And people go, oh, they're not pretty, look at it. But if they've picked something that's decaying clean and left the earth pretty much the way it was before that animal, you're probably saying, oh, why is she talking? We love animals. We don't want to talk about dead animals. But nature, you know, nature knows how to handle these situations, you know, and it seems sometimes cruel, but there's a balance in it that doesn't unbalance itself, where they take more than they need and then just waste the rest. And unfortunately, the only ones who are kind of guilty of that are us human beings. So we're still learning every day from those communities of animals that know how to work well together. The beaver lodge that works well, the wolves that hunt in a pack that works well. All right, mountain lions, they're very solitary. They live quite solitary except for mating season, but even they won't take more than what they need. And they will hunt down and take what they need, but they won't take more than they need. What about the intelligence of elephants? I don't think we even begin to understand how intelligent elephants are. And we know that elephants have emotions. You know, they will grieve for a family member that hasn't survived. And even a year later, when they come down their same trails, they will stop and remember where they lost that member of their band. You know, do we really think, are we as compassionate as the elephants are? How often do we look at a homeless person in the street and say, ew, they're dirty and they smell and they're probably not thinking in their right mind, they're begging, or sometimes they're mumbling. And that's still a fellow human being. You know, we don't know the circumstances of that human being, if they've mental difficulties that haven't been helped. You know, I think the animals don't have to deal with that. And lots of times, if there's an animal that dies soon after birth, nature knows that something, you know, wasn't right with that animal and takes that animal back to the spirit world. And yes, I believe that the animals, they have a spirit. Every living thing has a spirit. So why wouldn't they go to a resting place where there is a spiritual value for them? Why they're not valued as, you know, we're supposed to be the great thinkers. And the animals go on what humans call instinct. But it's not quite that simple, I don't think. So birds will find ways to survive even when we're not filling the bird feeders for them. They'll dig through and find something to eat even through the snow. And what meaning do they have for us? We are all so happy when we can open our windows in the spring and hear, you know, hear the birds singing again. And, you know that they're returning, that they're building nests. And, you know, I have a friend who trimmed the donkey the other day. And before they could get a basket to scoop up all the hair, birds had taken so much of the donkey's hair that had been clipped off. Builders, they knew they could use that to help build their nests and hold it together. So do we think about things like that? We think that we're always going to have this safe, lovely place to live and what have. What if? Sometimes we really need to think about what if. You know, polar bears and seals are struggling now because polar ice caps are melting. And they're enormously wonderful swimmers, but they have to be able to rest too. So what's going to happen when there's no ice floes for them to get up on and what have you? So are we wasting our resources at such an alarming degree that, like the polar bear and the seal, we won't have enough resources to take care of what we need? Friend came the other day from Massachusetts, and she brought with her original corn seeds. You know, the ears of corn, they weren't what we see in the supermarket. They were smaller and different color. When the meal's ground up, it's whiter than what we see, but full of nutrients and nourishments. And this animals are smart. They'll seek out plants that have the best nutrients, the best nourishments for them. In many respects, they're smarter than we are because they still know how to seek out the medicine plants. Most of us can't do that. We can't look at a field of yarrow and go, well, that's a weed. Well, that weed can be a wonderful, useful thing. When you wet it and mash it up in a bowl, it can help heal cuts or open wounds, you know, from the natural world. So it's really an honor to talk with professionals who are using, yes, the modern technologies, but they're finding better solutions than just chemicals and what have you to help the animals and ultimately in the long run to help humankind as well. What about some joy? The animals still know how to play and have fun. We're so busy overscheduling ourselves with everything. Oh no, my kid's got to go to soccer. And then after soccer, there's piano lessons and the kids aren't allowed to be kids anymore. They're so overscheduled and the parents are so overscheduling their kids and overscheduling themselves. And you know, we only get so much time on this beautiful planet called Earth. So slow down. Take a breath. You know, now I was out. My people build a little sapling house called the Sweat Lodge. It really is a purification lodge. And so we've been working on that ground, first of all, asking Mother Earth's permission to do that. And so boulders had to be moved. I mean, major boulders, not little rocks. with an excavator. And we went out with tobacco, cornmeal, and water to apologize to Mother Earth because we were going to have to disturb her in the process, and apologize for that. And the other day, my adopted brother, he was running the machinery and moving these great rocks who've probably been sitting where they're sitting for hundreds and hundreds of years. And we apologized to the rocks. And the rocks were amazing shapes. So sometimes you have to look at something you've walked past a dozen times. The animals will do that. They'll walk past and they'll have been on that trail hundreds of times before, but they're always looking like, what may be out, what's different, what might, do I need to be careful about? And they'll observe everything, whereas we don't really take time to observe the way the animals observe it. And so there are many changes going on. And so I went out to look at the work that my adopted brother had done, and he'd done an impeccably beautiful job. But what resonated with me the most was how the earth smelled, how fresh and beautiful the earth smelled. And we kind of needed some rain. We got a little last night. But you know, there again, there's that water. That water is life. And just to sit there and breathe that in, it was wonderful. And while we went down there, there was a hawk circling over and talking to us. That's a pretty powerful sign. And then further up the hill, I have poor sight, so I didn't see it. But my brother and the other young man with us, they said, "Grandma, be quiet. There's a fox watching us up at the top of the hill." And the fox probably has a den up there and is saying, "What are these damn humans doing coming so close to where I've got my den with my kits? And we're not going to disturb that fox. We're not there to disturb her and her family. We just kind of get a kick out of seeing them. We could. But they're clever. They know how to blend, as I said before. So what are the animals teaching us? The little skunk who warns you, you know, he doesn't really get any pleasure out of spraying you. He'll spray you. That's his only defense. But he'll stomp his little feet on the ground. Like, stay away, let me alone, go away, don't make me turn around and spray you. Are we teaching people to have respect for us? Because the fox is about respect. You're gonna, the skunk. That skunk is actually teaching us about respect. Are we going to respect another person's space? Are we going to respect their viewpoint? So the simple little cute little skunk, and they really are a cute little animal. But if you get sprayed, let me tell you, I don't care how much tomato juice and stuff you use, you're going to smell like that spray for quite some time. So that little skunk, are we respecting each other? Are we respecting the place we live? Are we caring for it in the nicest? I'm kind of a collector, and I looked around the other day and said, oh, there's a lot of stuff that's going to have to get gifted away here. I don't really, at my age, need all these things. So are the things in our life that we could let go of and maybe gift away or gift to a charity, whatever, and keep the things that are very meaningful, that have good sentimental value, or that are very practical, that we need in our life. So the animals, when they travel, they're not taking a lot of stuff with them anywhere. They're going to take what they need to survive. And I'm not saying we shouldn't have nice things or appreciate nice things. Yes, of course we should. But there again, how much stuff do we need? The animals travel light. They don't carry a lot of stuff with them. So we can learn that lesson of we can do with less, because the animals don't drag a lot of stuff with them. You have squirrels. One of my friends is on this call right now. She went to move her hay, and there was some really industrious squirrel, because there were piles of nuts here and piles of nuts here and piles of nuts there, way back behind where the very back of the hay was stored. And that's all right to just save something for a rainy day, but you don't want to get too carried away with that. So we're learning from the squirrel. Yes, it's good. It's good to store it away, and you don't have to let anybody know what you're storing away, but you can get carried away with that too. I don't think that little squirrel needed that many nuts as he had stored. So we'll go on with that, but I wondered if Alan and Jeff had any thoughts on this thus far. No.
Yeah. Unmute. I'm just absorbing all your wisdom, and you know, as I was saying to you before we went on, the lessons that the animals share with us are in each and every moment, and I tend to gather the information that they're sharing in this very moment, you know, like as I'm going through a challenging situation, and I ask my guides and my ancestors and everything, just, okay, send me some wisdom addressing this situation. And then I look up, and a bald eagle flies right by. And as we were saying, it's paying attention to those things. And I had just finished a book that I was guided to, and I shared with you before, called From the Trail of Tears to the Star People. And it's fascinating, absolutely fascinating. It took me out of many of my belief systems. And it was the chief of the Cherokee, Amiwaya, who was leading his people on the Trail of Tears. And the lessons, the messages that his ancestors gave him that kept him going, despite all the cruelty and everything that he was experiencing. And so it's paying attention to those messages that come to us in many different forms. And the animals are sharing with us all the time. And, you know, as you know, as we've talked, I'm blessed where I am, but even though I've spent decades in the horse barns with that you and I have parallel lives in, and now, you know, where I live, yeah, the bald eagle goes by, or just as you were talking, there's a pair of turkey vultures that nests right by my house, and they come back to the same spot every year, the same couple, and they just returned. And I go, zowie, you know, like their wisdom, where they're getting that from, that they come within days at the exact same time to the exact same tree, and have their nest there. and the wisdom of the turkey vulture that, you know, I never really appreciated before, and how they fly right by. And with the wind and the rain, the turkey vultures and the bald eagles and the ravens just are all swirling about together. And as, again, I was just asking for wisdom and information from them regarding things in my life. And then I was walking outside, and these deer that, these two brothers that watched me when they were tiny, and I was burying their mother, who had been on my property for over 20 years. And she saw me and gave me this sad look as she was passing. And a friend and I buried her right there and said our prayers. And the two little fawns that were just tiny at that moment saw that. And that night, they did circles around her grave. Mm-hmm. And since then, they've totally imprinted on me as their parent. And right before this, they showed up and started looking in the window at me, and the raven flew by, and I'm going, okay, you know, the animal wisdom is here. And it made me grateful that I'm here with you on your birthday, sharing your wisdom and all of it. It's the wisdom that traverses and transcends all time and space. So, yeah.
It's relevant to me that you talk about the raven and the deer, because all of them have a lesson for us. You know, deer is a flight animal. And we as humans, there's so much fear in the human world right now. And the desire, can't I just run away and take flight? And we can't. We have to stand firm, even in frightening situations. And for, of course, when I see a raven, the raven represents magic. And there's magic everywhere if we just reach out and touch it. For you to observe these things and to help that those deer, so that they've imprinted with you now, these deer. And of course, Native people believe the eagle is the one who takes our prayers up to the great creator. And that if they're, you know, creator's time is not our time. We always want instant gratification. And the spirit's timetable is nothing like our timetable. We want it now. Why can't I have it now? My intention is good. I don't understand. You're not hearing my prayer. Well, sometimes the answer to the prayer is no, because you're down the road, you'll go, ooh, I'm glad that prayer didn't get answered. It wouldn't have been the right thing. So, you know, the animals kind of, they will flee in fear from a fire or from gunshots. You know, they know that that could be deadly, and so they will. I think right now that a lot of humans want to be the flight animals, and we humans can't. We have to stand and face. You know, it's like a buffalo in a storm. Most animals will turn their backs, you know, not a buffalo. He'll turn right around and let the storm hit him in the face, and because they have this amazing endurance. And I think a lot of us don't have the endurance that we once had, because life has softened us a bit, you know. But that there's a time to know when flight is a good thing, and there's another time to know when flight is not a good thing. And because of so much what man has done to planet Earth, as far as depleting her resources and what have you, you know, as I said, polar bears and seals are wonderful swimmers, but when you take away the ice floes where they could rest for a while, that's a very concerning condition or statement. And if we're doing that to the animals, aren't we really doing that to ourselves as well? You know, the building rate around here is quite alarming. And yes, all right, people need homes and what have you, but I just drove by a house this morning and I said, I hope it's a group home or something, because I don't see how even four people could live in a house as gigantic as the footprint and the outer structure of this house looks like. Wow. How many people are going to live in that gigantic house? I'm not very good with square feet, but I know this is one heck of a giant house. How much raw resources is going to take to operate that house as well?
Yeah. I'd be interested in your perspective on something we've seen here, and it's been reported when you were talking about the polar bears, and you're from the bear clan, and everything that what they've noticed here is with the climate change, with the decreased habitat for the polar bear, there are a number of polar bears that are interbreeding with grizzlies now, and so that they can live in a different environment. Yeah. And where's that? Is that sheer accident, sheer survival? Is there some deep inner knowing?
I believe that these animals have a deep inner knowing. They're seeing the loss of their habitat. The polar bears are seeing the loss of their, and they know that these other bears survive mostly on land. The polar, you know, grizzly bear can swim too. Don't kid yourself. All yeah. bear can swim, but a polar bear really depends on those ice flows. And I think that instinctively, here's again where, you know, human intelligence is superior. Is it really? I'm not too sure about that. So these polar bears are saying, here's a, oh my goodness, this just hit me. A really good analogy. So these polar bears are realizing we may have to, they're destroying our habitat. What can we do to survive? Well, maybe we need to mix with these other bears that know how to survive without being in the water as much as we are. Maybe they know more about surviving in a more temperate climate than we're accustomed to. But nobody wants to say that the animals have that much intelligence or instinctive ability. So here's an analogy with the native people in that. Along the eastern seaboard here, you had, you know, Narragansett, Pagasset, you had many, many nations. And in our prophecy, it says it was foretelling of the light-skinned race that would come across the big water. And in the prophecy, it says, leave some behind to see what the intent of these people is, but take half of the band and go to where the food grows on the water, wild rice in the Great Lakes. And so that's what happened. Some of the people stayed on the eastern shore, and others went into places like the Great Lakes where the food grew on the water. So what happened to the ones who stayed to see what these people that were going to come across the big water were like? And in the beginning, for 30 years, it wasn't bad. It was doable. But then the invaders wanted more land. They wanted to push the indigenous people off their land, and they did by force. And it started skirmishes and massacres. Well, many of the men, the indigenous men, native men, were captured. They were put on sailing ships to go to places like the West Indies and sold there, leaving the women pretty much on their own with small children, with only the old men in the village and very, very young boys. And they'd meet in circles with other nations and say, you know, along the Eastern Seaboard. And the women would say, who's going to provide for us? Who's going to hunt? Who's going to fish? And at that time, there were some people of color, indigenous freedmen who were not slaves. So the women had a choice. Do they go with those men? Do they go with the white men who are taking away life as they've known it? So many, many of your, particular your Northeastern tribes, there was a lot of African American or freedmen marriages into the native. And so that's your first mixing. And many of the Eastern tribes look quite African rather than what, you know, pure Algonquin or pure Mohawk or pure Oneida would have looked like. But you see, the women made a choice to survive and for their children to survive. And I think the bears are making that kind of choice, proving that, you know, the animals are not dumb animals, as so many people say they are. They're trying to adjust to changing circumstances. But if we lose some of these magnificent creatures, that will be very devastating to us if there's no more real polar bears out there. I have a friend in Greenland, and she sends me photographs all the time, and they're not even experiencing the winters that they once experienced. So are the animals aware of this? And are they actually trying to adjust in many, many situations to this? It's like, here's a lesson too about how to handle aggressive people. And the lessons from an eagle regarding crows, which will foolishly torment an eagle or a hawk. And you know, that's really a stupid torment, because if the eagle or the hawk decided to use those talons or beaks, you know, which could break the bone right through in a person, but they don't do that. They'll put up with them clawing and pecking and all of this. And you know how they settle it? They fly higher and higher and higher until the crows can't deal with the height and they fall away. Wouldn't that be wonderful if we could teach ourselves to all the annoying people in our life, that we could just fly higher and until they wear themselves out? And in a way, the eagles and the hawks are teaching us that. Don't let people trigger you and get under your skin. We don't do that. We just fly higher and they fade away. So I think the message there from the animals for us is take the higher road and just ignore the ones who are, forgive the language, what my friend Lenny would call shit disturbers. You just you know, they want the attention, so don't give them the attention. And eventually they'll drop off like the crows do with the eagles and the hawks. So there again, a lesson for the animals, like, I'm not going to come down to your level and do this. I'm the eagle. I fly the highest. I take the prayers of the human beings up. I can't be bothered with you foolish crows trying to devil us and play with us. You see, if we kind of put it in that perspective where somebody's kind of pushing our triggers, and you're like, you want to snap right back at them. And if you don't, that's what they're looking for. They're looking for the attention. So the eagles and the hawks have it figured out. Just, we'll just rise above it and they'll just fall away. So you see, there are teachings when you observe what the animals are doing and how they're doing it. And yeah, I mean, if somebody comes in your home and threatens your family, you're going to stand your ground and you're going to try and protect your family. And sometimes that doesn't end well, but it's a natural thing. Animals will defend their territory. Their survival may depend on that. Our survival might depend on something like that. So, you know, unfortunately, there's always been conflict. There probably always will be. But if you can find a good source of conflict resolution, for the eagle and the hawk, it's just fly above it. Let it fall to the ground. It's fine, you know. The flight animals, you know, when they're threatened, they'll run because they don't really have a better defense system. If somebody's after us all the time, the hardest thing is not to engage. But when you engage, that's exactly what that difficult person wants you to do. They want you to engage. Whereas if you ignore it, it's like they get very discouraged, they give up. You know, human beings differ in the animals. The animal will react right away with instinct and what have you. Humans will think it through, like if you do something that somebody doesn't like and they have a little power over you, they'll use the power to badger you and insult you and what have you. And depending on how bad the situation is, you'll either just totally ignore them. There's nothing that a person despises more than being ignored. Yeah. That's about the most insulting thing you can do, is ignore their rhetoric and their wanting you to engage in the controversy. And animals will avoid that thing unless they're really backed into it. Then they'll have to stand their ground and fight as best they can. But for the most part, animals won't go looking for a fight, where unfortunately, I think some human beings really enjoy looking for a fight. So just be the eagle and the hawk and fly higher. Don't engage, because engaging is very, very much what they want to see you doing, you know?
That is a beautiful, because that exact situation with the ravens and the hawks was happening right in front of me. And I would watch the eagle go higher and the ravens attacking and squawking and then eventually give up as the eagle went higher and higher. So thank you. I've had that visual right from my window.
So if we have a person that's taunting us like this and trying to engage by harsh words or a harsh action, the more we the more we don't respond, usually they'll either like totally flip out or they'll just give up. Like,
exactly.
Couldn't get them to engage in that. So there again, you see, we've learned a really, really best, very valuable lesson from the animals in that. And, you know, the animals won't forget it. Us human beings, sometimes that people know how to push our buttons, you know, and they'll get us rolled up and we'll look like, ah, darn, why didn't I just ignore that?
Right.
Because ignoring something is the most insulting thing you can do. By not engaging, that is like, do you get the message that, you know, you're trying to push my buttons and I'm not alone. I refuse to allow you to have that much control over me. And the animals have good ways of dealing with that. You know, the animals can be funny. When I used to travel, you know, I have to go to gatherings and things because where am I going to get more knowledge to bring back and share? And I my horse was alive at the time, Solitaire. And this horse and I had like a really special bond. And so I would tell him I was going away and that Aunt Sandy would look after him. And, you know, I knew he was going to be well cared for. I wouldn't have him in a place where he wasn't well cared for. When I would come back, though, he was a really pretty chestnut horse. And I'd call him, you know what I'd get? I'd get the rump in my face. So say that animals can't react to their humans. Yes, they can react like, I'm ticked off at you because you went away for a week and I didn't see you. And I depend on you to come and groom me every day and to bring me my carrots. So there's an interaction between humans and animals and the animal letting you know on no uncertain terms that he's not happy with you at all. I have a border collie, her name is Nika. And she's sprawled out on the love seat right now, her favorite piece of furniture. And she has me so well trained. Like she will go and stand in the hall between the front door and the living room like, what's the matter with you? I need to go outside now. Okay, right. She'll stand by the kitchen door and give me a dirty look like, hey, my water bowl needs filling. So there's the communication, that telepathic communication between our animals and us that we talked about, I think, in the first webinar. You know, so that animal has me trained. I don't have her trained. I mean, she will sit, she will stay, she will do things, but she also has a very clear way of communicating what she wants me to do. I've had friends who hated being their attention being on another person or what have you, and a phone will ring, they'll howl and what have you, because they don't want their human talking into this strange thing to another human. This is my time, this is my house. So how dare you be picking up that strange thing that I hear voices on sometimes. And it's funny because they will know voices. I have a wonderful friend who takes care of Nika when I have to travel. And I'll hold the phone up to Nika's ear and say, it's Aunt Laurie. The ears go up so she knows who that is. So for those of you who think that we're not still really communicating on a level that most of us can't explain fully, I believe it's a vibrational level, a telepathic level. And I know Isis, probably out there, is an amazing animal communicator. And some people really have this gift and can refine this gift and tell you exactly what the animal's thinking, you know. So that connection between humans and animals is something we all can work at, you know? And when we understand that we're the partners of these animals, you know, they depend on us for certain things, but we have them because they fulfill certain things for us as well. It's a reciprocal agreement that we have with our animals and even with the animals in the forest. We've had bear sightings here, and this, you know, is a pretty suburban area. So for us to have bear sightings, like, and people are saying, oh, I'm afraid for my chickens. They wrecked my bird feeders. Well, they're hungry. They're just coming out of the cave. They're really hungry. They're going to do stuff like that. So be sure and lock your garbage bins up, or don't take the garbage out till you know the garbage truck's on the way. And realize that we're chewing up their environment. Their environment. And so be patient with them. They have as much right to survive as we do. So they're teaching us that too, you know. Try and leave space for us. Make sure that we have a right to live too. We have a right to exist. And how sad our world would be when we couldn't see these beautiful creatures who really are our brothers and sisters. In the indigenous way, they are sacred, even more sacred, because they are our teachers. You know, and that's what we've tried to talk about in these webinars, that the respect, there has to be mutual respect between the animals and ourselves. You know, and don't go up and, you know, people go to Custer State Park, I want to pet the fuzzy cow. Don't go petting a buffalo, especially a buffalo that has young. You're going to end up on the wrong end of that. If you see the bear in your neighborhood, what a joy to see that bear. But don't go out and try and engage that bear. Look, watch, you know, respectfully from it. Here it's about that mutual respect for each other. You know, if he's coming up on your porch and you're nervous about that, go grab some pots from the kitchen and bang the pots. Most of the time, they'll run away. They don't want to engage, but they're curious. Somebody sent me a video the other day of bear cubs coming up on their porch and picking up a mat and inspecting the welcome mat and, you know, looking at the wicker chairs and, you know, kind of climbing up on the wicker chair. And, you know, they're just curious. So if you're not comfortable with that curiosity, bang pots and pans and turn the radio on loud or something like that, because they'll run away. They don't want to engage, but, you know, respect, mutual respect. I'm trying to think of a few more really good lessons from the animals. And, you know, that respect one is a very, very important one. You know, they need to learn to respect your space, but you also have to respect that their environment is constantly changing. And so it's difficult for them as well. So
one,
Jeff or Alan, want to add to that? It's really important point.
Yeah, which point I was... Yeah, it's important. My sense, and correct me if I'm wrong, Grandma, but it's the difference. So many of the examples you're giving, it's humans coming from ego, from the head versus from the heart. And the more humans come from their heart, the more they're connecting to the heart of the bear or the animal. And behaviors will change as one comes from their heart versus their head.
That's so true, Alan.
Their heart.
Because one of our things that we learn from our elders very early on is take it from here. Longest journey you're ever going to make is from here down here to your heart.
Yeah.
And, you know, and if you haven't grown up in an environment with the wild things and understanding that each has a message, it's like now we're seeing, you know, the birds, and there's messages that they bring us. When you see cardinals, that's your ancestors or a relative who crossed coming to visit you to check on you, make sure you're okay. When the robins come, years ago, there's a beautiful legend. Maybe I'll even tell you that legend about the robin, the first robin. Long, long, long ago, there was a great sachem, a great chief. And he had but one son. But he put so much pressure on this boy that he had to run the fastest. He had to be the best one at lacrosse. You know, everything, because it was the chief's son, he had to be the best at it. And the boy adored his father and wanted to please him. And, you know, the uncles helped in the teachings then, and they would caution the father, give him a chance. He's young. He's doing so well. Don't, you know, he's giving you the best he has to give. But this chief, he was very arrogant about this. And it was still February or March when here in New England, it's still years ago anyway, when we had real winters. We haven't had a real winter this year. You didn't put the young boys out on what we call a vision quest or a vision fast. And when you go out on that, it's you pray to receive a dream and an animal guide to help you, right? And so he said to his wife, it's like March and snow all over, ice and cold, mean winds, and I'm going to put Little Bear out. No, none of the other boys are going. Look at the snow, ice on the ground. It's not the right time. Please don't do that. But he was very arrogant and stubborn. And he said, no, I'm going to put him out now. She goes, but none of the other boys are going. None of the 11-year-old boys are going. No, he insisted on taking the boy out. He had just a little lean-to and a, you know, rabbit fur robe and his father's pipe to pray with. And it was bitter cold. The winds were howling. And so he left him out there, and the next morning he went. He said, well, who came last night in a dream? And the boy said, Father, the deer came to me and he told me how to blend in with the forest to become almost invisible and how to be swift so that I could find the game trails and what have you. That's not good enough. You stay out here some more, get a better vision. And back he went. It got even colder and meaner night. And his wife said, please, it's too cold out there. It's not good. He's just a boy. Listen to that wind out there. It's so cold. He's only got a rabbit robe with him to keep him warm. Just in a little lean-to. That's not good enough. No. Sachin would listen to her. The next morning he went out and he said, so who came to you last night? Father, Makwa, the great bear, came. He showed me so many medicine plants what I could use for what illness, what have you, what have you. Many, many plants, different plants, how to use them. You could do better. Father, that was the great Makwa, was the great bear. He told me he would help me. No, you stay out here. Back he went. And that night, a bitter cold ice storm came. Next day, everything was slippery, dangerous, frozen. The temperature dropped 20, 30 degrees. And now his wife was furious. You show me where our son is and I'm bringing him home. And you better not fool with this. We're going to get our son and bring him home. This time the sachem listened to what his wife was saying. He looked out and he knew that it wasn't good. And so they slipped and slid on their snowshoes out to the lean-to. But when they got there, the boy was gone. No tracks, nothing, because the wind had blown so much. The wife began to cry hysterically. Where's my son? What has happened with my son? You pushed him too hard. Nothing he ever did was good enough for you. Where's my son? I want my son. And by that, a bird flew on top of the lean-to. And I'd never seen a bird like this before. On his chest, he had this beautiful orangish red. And the bird spoke to him, said, Father, I tried my very best, but nothing could please you. And so the spirits came and took me. But they let me come back as this bird. They call me a robin. And none of the boys should ever be put out on their vision fast before they see me in great numbers return to the land. And so the boys are never put out until the robins fly back in. A whole story finished. But a story of, once again, what the animals show us about our will and our desire to manipulate and put pressure on things that we really don't totally understand. And we're still guilty of that. I see it around me all the time with the young people whose parents put such expectations on them. You know, when I was a little girl, I had all boy cousins. And I was a prissy little thing. My mother said if I got dirt on my dress, I wanted to change. But the boys didn't want to play tea party with me. They wanted to climb rocks and trees and stuff. So I played with my cousins. But my cousin Billy, he always knew that I didn't see things too well. And if we were climbing rocks, he'd go, Nance, put your foot here. And he'd show me where to put my foot. And, you know, I learned to do the things that the boys did. But yet I still was that prissy little thing that didn't want dirt on my dress. My mother said sometimes she had to change my clothes 3 times a day. You know, I see around me now, well, you got to go to soccer, then you have violin practice, then you got to get your homework done because we want you to do really good on the SATs, because if you don't get into the best college possible, you're not going to have a good life, you won't make money, blah, 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 blah. And yes, and I always had to do my homework too. I tell you, it was the things I liked, I did really good. Math and stuff like that, I was terrible. And I drove my counselors crazy because I did good in science and lousy in math. They couldn't figure that out. So that's not good either. That's a little out of balance. But they overschedule these kids and they don't let them go out and watch worms come to the surface or watch how a squirrel will go up the tree or come down head first to face anything he has to face. Remember that when you have a bad situation, you try and duck away from it. Remember that squirrel who comes down head first and just launches into whatever situation they have to launch into. There again, a teaching from a little animal. But that little animal faces what he has to face. You know, what about the little mouse? And I think I told you all the story of jumping out, who had so much faith. But mice know how to survive some horrific situations. Aren't we as smart as a mouse? Can we not, when we're faced with a difficult situation, face it as best we can, get through it as best we can? Because even on our worst possible day, each day when the sun rises, there's a new hope for our dreams to come true. You know, so nature is teaching us these lessons all around, all the time. We just have to pay attention to them. We have to pay attention to what the animals are trying to teach us when we see them. My teacher, Louise Wawate, was frog medicine, water medicine. And she could be fluid like the water. I never really saw her. She could be stern, but not angry. And she'd say, you'd say, I'll try. And she'd say, no. No try. Do. Just do. And her nickname was Twitch, which means I'll get it done. So she didn't want to hear I'll try. She wanted to hear I'll do. And you know, she knew the disposition of the waters, of everything that lived in around the waters. I think I told you a story of my adopted brother, Eddie Two Bears. And when his mother was a little girl, and he was a small child, she'd tell him how it was at Charbot Lake Abajawan when she was growing up as a little girl. And she'd say, otter'd sneak in and sleep with us kids. And he couldn't figure that out. How'd the otter get in the door? So when he went to Canada to his uncle, they sent him all by himself at 6 years old on two buses to go to Charbot Lake, Canada, which is in Ontario. And his uncle Albert was the medicine man there. And the first thing he asked his uncle Albert was, what is my mother talking about the otter snuck in? How'd the otter get in the house? A natural question for a 6-year-old, right? And his uncle Albert Less, he said, Eddie, he said, we lived in the last of the dirt floor wigwams, and our door was hide, was bear hide. And at night, when the fire was lit, and you know, they kept wood stoves to keep the fire going all night, that's a daunting job, I've done it. When the kids would snuggle down in their hide beds with their rabbit fur robes and what have you, after dark, the otter would open the hide door and sneak through and crawl in bed with the kids and sleep with the kids because it was warm and dry. And then when the first light of dawn was coming, the otter would sneak back out the hide door. Pretty smart little otter, huh? But I thought, you lucky buggers, wouldn't I just love to have otter crawl in and keep my feet warm at night? So you see, First Nations people had this rapport, no fear that the otter was going to bite them or anything like that. They had trust. Now, as I've said, you have to have respect too. So don't go putting the fuzzy cows if you go out to South Dakota, because you won't end up on the good end of that. And if you see somebody from my clan, the Bear Clan, as they say, watch from a distance, because they're beautiful to watch. But if they get too close, make a lot of noise, because they're not really aggressive unless they feel threatened. And I think that's true of most animals. And I think that Jeff and Alan would back me up on that. Mostly an animal will hurt you because it's afraid or feels threatened. Most animals won't deliberately come after you unless they're really sick or really hurt. They're the veterinarians, so they know a lot more about that than I do. But the animals are teaching us lessons every single day. Try and have that squirrel medicine so you have the courage to face things that you might not be comfortable with head on. Have respect for yourself, but for others too. You know, dominant society people aren't taught to listen the right way. The minute somebody starts 6 words in a sentence, we start judging what they're saying, what we're going to answer that with. That's not the right way to listen. Animals don't listen that way. Got to listen to every word that comes out and try and look at the different ways those words may have been meant. And then we might disagree totally with what has been said, but at least we've taken the time. It's what my people call sitting in the silence. And you need to sit in the silence to digest things the right way. You know, we're told have to answer instantly, has to be instant gratification. That's not true. That's why people make fun of Indian time. Because, you know, we'll say, oh, I'm going to have grand entry at the powwow, 12 o'clock, 12:30 comes along. You know, the drum's sitting there waiting. They're still smudging people going into the dance arena or what have you. You might start at 1:15 if you're lucky. The spirits have a different time frame than we have. What's an eternity to us is a nanosecond to them. And the animals, they know when it's time to rest. They know when it's time to flee. They know when it's time to seek their food and save it for another day. They don't take more than what they need. They're a lot smarter than we are in many, many respects. So these are just a few things that we can think in. Take an animal that you really like and learn as much as you can about that animal, because it may be that the animal is trying to teach you a very important lesson for your life. We have in my Medewin Lodge, as you go up the different degrees or initiations, we have certain animals that help us. So the first animal we get is a little weasel. Because think about that weasel. In the summertime, that weasel's brown and it blends in, and sometimes you don't even know that little weasel's there. But then comes the winter and the snow, and that weasel turns pure away. Adjustability. Animals can teach us about adjustability. Then that second animal that we work with is the otter. And we all know that, that's one of my favorite spirit animals. And the otter is a very serious animal. Remember, I told you the story of this, of the otter. But the otter, to watch otters play, brings us such joy. And the little otter couples, when they sleep at night, they hold each other's paw so they won't drift away. And when the little baby otter comes, that baby otter goes everywhere attached to its mother so that they don't get separated. Or, oh, this is my border collie saying, what are you saying? Soon, okay. She's saying, I want to go out and it's getting, I think, near my dinner time, Mom. Dr. Jeff has got her on such, she's doing so good on her new wonderful diet. So, you know, be patient with each other. You know, you'll see an animal that's fishing, a bear, my clan, I'm a bear clan woman, and they'll patiently go by that water and wait till they see that fish. Grab that fish. Have patience. Have patience with yourself. Have patience with other people as well. Most of us are doing the best we can. You know, don't get impatient. It's not quick enough. It's not, that's what's wrong with our world. Everything has to be instant. It doesn't have to be instant. You know, they laugh and say, stop and smell the roses. But we really should. Yesterday, people brought me beautiful flowers. I'm not a good gardener. I'm much better with animals than I am with plants. But my house is just filled with beautiful flowers. And I said, thank you. I don't need them filling a room when I'm in a box. I'd much rather be enjoying them right now. And I am. And, you know, just, you know, each day, when that sun comes up in the sky, and even when the cloudy days, it's up there, you know. If it's light out, it's up there. That fire in the sky is what ignites the fire in our own hearts. The animals, they instinctively know what's right to do, what's dangerous for them to do. Sometimes they don't have a choice, they have to face the dangers. You know what? We're just big animals too. Sometimes we have to face the dangers with courage. You know, what is that rock and roll song, Somebody Light My Fire? So I hope you all light your fires. So it's just a few of the things that the animals are teaching us and encouraging our brothers and sisters, because we are all related. Mitakwiasin, the Lakota say. It means that everything is related, from the tiniest little insect up to that great eagle who takes up our prayers. You know, treat each other with kindness. Treat the animals with kindness. Treat the plants, the water, all living things, because every one of those things in our way of thinking has a spirit. And don't neglect your own beautiful spirit. Let it shine. Even though we have very hard days, this thing we call life is a big classroom. And sometimes we're going to get straight A's, and sometimes we might get a great big zero. It's okay. Just part of it. So I have no idea how we're doing in on time, Jeff, where we're at.
We value your time. I know it's been a very busy weekend for you. So I think we can wrap it up. It's an hour and a half, Grandma, so I think we're
Well, if there are any questions that somebody, you know, that I can help with, I'll do a few questions. And thank you for that. It's been a busy weekend, and believe it or not, I have a call to Canada that has to go in before I can actually just go. But you know what? To all of you out there, thank you so much for coming. To Jeff and to Alan, thank you. I've truly had a wonderful time with this and enjoyed it. I know it's probably a very different approach for many of you. So thank you listening to, you know, this little bit I bring you. And I keep going home to my peers who teach me even more so that I could bring it back. Next week, I'll be going to Initiation of Grandmothers in Canada, because to us, a grandmother is not just a physical grandmother. It implies an elder or grandmother implies that we have to know something about the creation stories, the songs, the legends, the history of the nations. And we have so many issues that we're facing now. One of them that really is close to my heart is the missing and murdered women. And now it's boys and men as well. And it's so underreported and so hideous that human trafficking is a global problem, as is the pollution of our waters. If there's no waters, there's no life. The animals need the water, the plant needs the water, we need the water. So, you know, we're surrounded with things. There's no reason not to get involved. And you think one person can't make a difference. But my friends out there, each one of us counts for something, and we're all in this together. So whether it be fighting for the animals or the plants or the water or each other, get involved. It's really important. There's this, there are wonderful things that Jeff and Alan are facilitating that you should get involved in. Consciousness of our animal sisters and brothers, being connected with them in a good way, in a holistic way. It's really, really very important. So, you know, Jeff, I can't see the chat. So if we have any questions or anything, sure, just for a last few minutes.
Lots of thank yous and happy birthdays. And Victoria was hoping you could shed some light on the frog medicine and the spring peepers that we're hearing around us all the time now.
Well, as I said, Louise was frog medicine. And that's a reminder, when we hear those peepers, you know that spring is here. Spring is coming to us. And that water medicine, water is life. So it reminds us to wash away the things that have troubled us. You know, try and purge that out of yourself. You know, when we go in the Inipi, the sweat lodge, we give up the water from our own body. And when the first door opens, there are four doors, and each one has a very significant meaning. When that goes out the door directly down the sacred road, that mixes with all the waters of the world. So what we're giving up in prayer and sacrifice could end up on an African plain somewhere. So when we hear those peepers, they're saying, spring here, renewal here, clean yourself up. And the frog is saying, bless the water, bless the water, bless the water, bless yourself. Drink the clean water, let it run through your system, let it clean your system out. So that's some of the messages from the peepers and the frogs. And when we go places, Victoria can tell you this, many times, like when we were making the Water Song video, we had a big drum, one of the big drums that we took to church. And on the drum, Mark Cumming, Victoria's husband, Mark came down and he said, "Grandma, look." And here was a frog. And Louise had already crossed into the spirit world. And he said, "Hi, Louise. Thanks for coming." I came out of a concert a few months ago and looked down at the big rock. And here was a great big frog. He said, "Hi, Louise. Hope you enjoyed the music too. I sure did." So, you know, our medicines that we work with, we really become a part of that medicine. And I really believe that every time I do something, I came home from doing a talk. It was a pretty serious talk. And I always hope and pray that I've done a good job for my ancestors. And on my front stoop, there was a big frog. He said, "Okay, Tweech, I did okay. Thanks for coming." Because it was Louise saying, "Okay, you did good. You didn't." She was always telling me, "When you're going to step up, when you're going to step up, when you're going to step up." Well, I stepped up. And now each and every one of you needs to step up too. So thank you.
Thank you, Grandma. Thank you, Al. Thank you all for coming. This was amazing. We hope we hear from you again in 2023 after your amazing travels and what you bring back to us. And thank you all.
Thank you all both. And thank you everybody out there. Have a beautiful rest of the day. I'm probably going to do this phone call to Canada and take a big long nap. So thank you so much.
Right.
Jeff, I love you. Alan, I love you. Victoria, I love you.
As we're ending, bald eagle just flew by, so sends you good wishes.
Miigwech, miigwech. Take care. You know, we have no words for goodbye. Right. We don't believe in goodbye. There's no such thing. So we just say, see you next time.
See you next time. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Miigwech.
Till then.